His eyes will deceive you. They will destroy you. They will take you from your innocence, your pride, and eventually your soul. These eyes do not see what you and I see. Behind these eyes, one finds only blackness, the absence of light. These are the eyes of a psychopath.
Long overdue to welcome back the man from Cinema Attack. It's like my brother from another mother, also my co-host, too. They're here. Let's give this guy a cheer, because he knows his shit to the T. Welcome back, Derek B.
Yo, you know, it's ironic that you guys had me on the two movies we're going to be talking about, where they say my favorite word like 4,000 times, and that's fuck.
Fuck.
Well, I'm fucking excited then. Yeah, man, Derek, we haven't done a podcast in a while, me and you, brother, in a while. I know you guys are always busy doing your thing.
Yeah, you know, I think the last time we recorded something was the Reservoir Dogs episode with Mike Merriman, of course, and that was a while ago.
That was a while. I feel like this podcast has changed so much since that.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot's changed since then.
Right?
Like, you were still in Massachusetts that yeah.
way. Like, I moved, different state, yep. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just crazy. And I've been loving like the episodes so far, guys. You've been putting out on the new network, so I got a few to catch up on. But good shit so far.
Well, if we were more consistent, like dropping podcasts like every week or something like that, we just decide to do it this way and just, you know, drop 10, 11 all at once. Who cares?
Yeah, fuck we
it.
Have radio silence for like a month. And yep. then we're like, ah, let's just do the Halloween franchise.
Drop a bomb on them.
It was, right, well, literally, there's a couple bombs in the franchise here. But yeah, it was a very last minute decision. But I did want to talk about that real quick, because Halloween for me has always been about spontaneity, you know, and just kind of doing what you feel in the moment. And that definitely applies for the podcasting as well. But if you can pull it off, you know, and finish it out strong, it is fun. You know, you do really get into the mood. If there's one way to get into the Halloween spirit, just immerse yourself in podcasting about the Halloween franchise and you'll get yourself there.
Right? Like, yeah. It definitely feels more like Halloween binging these.
Right. Like, it yeah. sucks sometimes. You don't want to, and you're taking notes sometimes, and you're just like, yeah. But overall, after all said and done, after you get these shows recorded or whatever, I'm not only really proud of it, but it really did work in terms of getting me into the Halloween spirit.
That and our guests have all been incredible. And
yes!
I know Derek is no exception.
Fucking
here.
Derek B in the place to be, because he got what it takes to rock the mic,
so,
right?
So yeah. Since it has... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Derek.
I was just going to say, you know, I always like these type of shows anyways, because the more I actually like listening about the Halloween franchise, and actually, well, not out of the season, of course. I'll watch a few of them here and there in the season. But I like always listen back to what other people think. They're like, oh, you never know. Here, no, like, Halloween 5 is my favorite, you know? I'm like, whoa, what the hell is that? You know?
Yeah,
different, right? Different, like, opinions and shit. And I always like that aspect about this franchise, because it's a weird franchise all in all together when
it
you
really
try
is.
To break it down.
Oh, it's one of the strangest. But to me personally, that's what makes it fun and exciting, because, you know, we've seen so many reiterations of this. We've seen, you know, this rebooted. We've seen every different type of sequel, every possible angle, any direction, you know, you could want to go. And after all said and done, I think that, you know, there's still demand for these movies. People are still going to go pay to see them. So I think that these movies will probably be around to the end of time.
Yeah, seriously. Sure.
You know, they might change the name up. They might, you know, over the years change certain things, but Halloween movies will always be a thing.
Right. And Derek, like I was trying to say before, it's been a while since you've been back. So we have changed a few things. So now, for our listeners, we like to do a fast five finger bang bang.
Finger bang, bang bang bang.
Finger bang, bang bang, finger bang bang, bang bang bang. I'm gonna finger bang bang. questions for you.
Oh, this sounds painful. Ooh. Way like, you describe it.
You know, as I'm like saying this, each episode of the finger bang, it's more like a five finger bang bang would be a fist.
Yeah, shocker. I was gonna say right, like that's a exactly that's a full on shocker.
All right, well, you're getting a fistful of five finger bang bang questions here.
Fistful of okay, sorry.
All right, so the first question, Derek B.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced anything paranormal?
It was this weird instance where I think I talked to my dead cousin through a Ouija board once.
Really?
Oh, what happened?
Well, the way that it happened was, it was actually not even like a real Ouija board. It was like one of those, like, computer, you know, the ones you use on your phone app.
Yep.
And
I thought you were going to say that, like, you took, like, newspaper and, like, created your own Ouija board with, like, cut out numbers and letters.
Hey, well, we're going to get into that because Michael Myers does that in one of the movies. But,
right.
Yeah. You know. Right. And it was like, he was starting to talk to me, and I'm like, what's your name? Rye, R-Y, and then it went down the no, spelling Rhino, which was his nickname.
Oh, shit.
Oh, damn.
And, yeah, I just went cold for a minute, and I was like, whoa. you know, because I was like, am I talking to you? Or because you never know, because Ouija boards always, spirits always lie and shit when you watch
right.
a lot of Ouija movies or whatever the fuck they are.
Right,
so
right.
I was like, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Whether it's you or not, bye.
You know, I feel bad if it was, but, you know, I don't like meddling with shit that, because you're not right. really supposed to Dude. Do that without somebody else, either way.
Yeah, we were just talking about this, like, we had, like, an offhand joke about a Ouija board, you heard me, I was like, no, like, I don't play with that shit.
We were talking about doing, like, different things for Facebook Live. I was like, should we do a Facebook Live seance with a Ouija board?
Fuck
Dan
that.
Goes, fuck no, baby.
No. I'm with Derek. It's like, even if there's a 1% chance that, you know, that's true and you know, they will come through and most likely deceive you or whatever, I want no part of that. Nah, let's move on.
All right, let's get into our next question. Derek, what has been your most creative Halloween costume?
I was Frankenstein one year. I actually wore, like, this big gray, like, you know, like, jacket coat thing, and, you know, I actually had, like, shoulder pads from, like, football shoulder pads on.
Nice.
And you know, my head's, like, huge anyway, so I didn't have to really do anything with that. I just painted it all green, you know, but...
How long did it take to get that paint off?
I forget. That was years ago. Probably, like, a few hours. It probably came off after I took a shower, but, you know, it's been so long since then, you know.
Yeah, one time I had to do a play for, it was like it was kind of like the 48-hour film festival, but it was like play style, and they put latex on my face, and it like literally burned off my face.
Really?
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, it was like it sunburned it, and like I peeled, and it was crazy. It hurt really bad.
I was the Jolly Green Giant one year, and they painted my face green. And in that same performance, that was the one where I fell off the stage. You're welcome. And I know there's a video of it, too. One of the dudes, actually, the dude you met, Ryan, who we met at Dino's one night, he was actually doing the dance with me. We were both, you know, the Jolly Green Giant on both ends of the stage. And, yeah, I'll never forget that. I fell right off the stage in front of the whole school.
Aw, and now I know why I love you even more. All right, Derek. It's no question to anybody that obviously you are very well versed in like performances, you know, by actors and actresses. So I have to ask, what do you consider to be the best male and female actress performance in a horror movie? It can be separate. It could be the same movie. But what do you consider to be the best?
Damn, you hit me with a bomb right there.
I knew one of these was going to trip you up.
Yeah.
You know, I'll actually pick the same movie because it's actually... I'm going to talk about it a little bit later and some of my thoughts on one of the movies. But I really like the... Did you guys ever hear of the movie Final Exam?
Yes.
With Jill Sholin?
No. Jill Sholin is not in that one. She was way too
young. Oh, is that Final cut?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what you're thinking of. But Final Exam is a 1981 slasher film that takes place on a school campus. And I really like the interaction with the main two, the nerdy kid, Radish. I can't think of the actor's name off the top of my head. Yep. And the main final girl in that film. I think they had good continuity with like their performance, and they actually have a really great scene together within the horror film, which ends in tragedy, which I don't want to really spoil what happens with some of the characters, but it's a really cool scene, and that's actually one of the reasons I like that type of slasher film, which goes into the character driven. If I was going to pick like a actor off the top of my head as a great horror performance, it definitely has to go with like a Jeffrey Combs and Reanimator, fantastic in that film.
Mm.
And you know, also I have to give a big shout out to one of my favorite scream queens of all time, Barbara Crampton, also in Reanimator. You know, fantastic performance, and she always surprised me, even like in newer movies like We Are for Still Here, she was amazing. And,
oh yeah, she was.
Yeah. So,
that's, I like that movie a lot.
That movie is amazing. Yeah.
Although she is a little bit questionable in Your Next.
Well, she just kind of lays there.
Like, the people are dying and she just like goes into the bed.
She's like, give me my pills, I can't deal with this. Like,
like, people are dying, Barbara.
I don't think that's going to work, Barbara Crampton.
Yeah, it was her first movie back after so long, so I'll give her a little break for that one.
But that's what, but I know what you're saying, but at the same time, that's why I was kind of upset. I was like, oh, okay, oh, she's back in the game. I was expecting a Ty West-like death, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, right out the gate, like, just get her, just mark her.
All right, next question, guys. All right, Derek, who is your favorite horror director, and who is also your least favorite horror director? And that can be, you know, either somebody that you just don't, you know, like, their body of work just isn't for you, or their body of work just pisses you the fuck off.
My favorite horror director of all time is crossed between a few different ones, but I'll do this the easy way out. Lucio Fulci, I love a lot of his movies. Even his bad movies I have fun with.
Mm-hmm.
When he directed my favorite horror film of all time, Zombie, I just love the atmosphere of that. He's a great atmosphere director. You know, his stories, maybe, like, you know, Nightmare Logic, with a lot of, like, things that would later be on with, like, Phantasm, you know, which that's a Don Coscarelli film, of course, but, you know, like, his Gates of Hell trilogy play with, like, is it real or not?
Right.
I like that aspect of his movies. And plus, he hates people's eyes, because he does a lot of eye mutilation in those. For my least favorite, and this is, I actually like a lot of this director's film, it's just some of his later career
yep.
kind of hurt it for me, okay. is Tobe Hooper.
Oh, okay.
I like a lot of his like late 80s to like 70s stuff, but then like when it hits the 90s, it's just such when it starts to go downhill with Hooper for me. Like The Mangler, I don't really care for. Mortuary is fucking terrible. That movie's awful. Trash fire. Can't wait to watch that again for 2005. But
did you like Two Box Brothers?
It was okay for what it was. It was. I liked the how he's like, fuck Sherry Moon Zombie, just kill her right in the beginning.
Right. Right.
I mean, it was all right. You know, it wasn't my. I like the original Two Box Murders more because it has my boy Cameron Mitchell in it.
Right on.
All right, so we got the last question, which is probably my favorite question that I could ask anybody, which is the fuck, kill, marry. And we're going to keep it specific to this episode here, but you don't get to choose from Rob Zombie's H1, it's going to be Rob Zombie's H2. So we're going to go Lori, Annie, and Mrs. Myers, but you can only choose them in the context of their characters in H2.
All fucked up.
Yes, all scarred and all, and one is like all in white.
One's not even there.
One's
So, fuck, kill, marry. Yeah, Lori, Annie, and Mrs. Myers.
Fuck, kill, marry. I'd probably have to say kill Lori.
I gotta know why.
Well, I'm going to say that for the review, buddy.
Oh, all right, we'll get into that later. All right.
Yeah, fuck Annie, marry Mrs. Myers, because she's disgraceful and she's not really there and she won't bother you. She's actually, she's nice. She's the nicest character in that movie. I'll just spoil that, my thoughts in that movie.
Did you get the horse with her?
Yeah, oh yeah, the horse could watch. It could be like that Witcher video game where you just fuck up.
I was just thinking for you to ride, but he's like, make him watch. He's like, look me in the eyes, horse.
You guys are fucked.
You're welcome, America.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I mean, well, with Annie, I mean, she'll get you to eat, like, gluten-free pizza. Oh, we'll get into that later.
That sounded like the most disgusting pizza ever.
All right. So, guys, we are going to kick off this episode. We're going back to the franchise here. Mm-hmm. Where this has now been rebooted. We're at that stage of the game to where Rob Zombie came in and said, I want to make a Halloween film.
Yeah, well, it was actually them going to him, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, he put his hand in it.
Oh, without a doubt, and I'm glad he did, and he didn't want to at first, you know, and he's just like, what else can I do? And this is the big thing, though. This is the big moment where things can completely, you know, go off the rails for people behind this idea, which is, I'm going to do my own fucking thing. And, you know, whether you love this or hate this, you have to appreciate it for at least him trying to do his own thing.
Right. And I'm going to read the synopsis of this one.
Yeah. These synopsis have been very hit or miss. Let's see what this one gives us.
The residents of Haddonfield don't know it yet, but death is coming to their small, creepy town, or sleepy town. 16 years ago, a 10-year-old boy called Michael Myers brutally kills his stepfather, his elder sister, and her boyfriend. 16 years later, he escapes from the mental institution and makes his way back to his hometown, intent on a murderous rampage pursued by Dr. Sam Loomis, who was Michael's doctor and the only one who knows Michael's true evil. Elsewhere, a shy teenager by the name of Laurie Strode is babysitting on the night Michael comes home. Is it pure coincidence that she and her friends are being stalked by him? That was like a fucking whole plot.
I was just going to say, now we don't even have to fucking review a movie.
All right, end scene.
All right, guys, thank you for joining us. Happy Halloween. No.
Bye.
All right. So, do you guys... All right, so the thing that's different about this film that is actually rebooted, I would say, is, you know, the backstory.
Right.
And I get it. Uh-huh. I do. Because, you know, when you think of, like, little kid killers...
Right.
You, like, think, like, they come from a white trash upbringing.
Right.
So, I definitely... Like, I mean, you think, like, oh, well, they must have been raised, like, in a poor place or, mm-hmm. like, you know?
Right.
So, like, I definitely get what he was doing for this concept. Do you guys like this white trashy concept, or...
Go ahead, Derek.
I thought I did when I first seen this movie. It's just... I don't know. Like, I like it more terrifying when you don't know. Like, that's what I was saying about, like, Final Exam. It's just a random dude that just decides, I'm gonna kill tonight, you know? I like that aspect of those types. The original Halloween, he's just a random... You just wake up one day and like, I'm going to kill my sister. Fuck it. You know, with the way... I respect it for what it is. I respect it. Why did he have to make every character so fucking unlikable in the first 5 minutes of the movie?
Right. That's a problem.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that would drive anybody to kill, I think.
Right. Well, and at least though... Okay, listen... With all these franchises, you can get into the backstories, but it never seems like we do. You know, as many fucking Friday the 13th sequels that we get, even if we do get a reboot like we did, and I personally love that reboot, the origin stories are fucking danced around. They're, you can always go back to them and reignite the story, you know?
Yeah.
You can always, because with all these franchises, it's directors that are constantly having to, like in this case, reboot a franchise or, you know, take it from where the last one was. And shit, man, that's why when Jason goes to Manhattan and he turns into a little kid again and, like, all that craziness happens, like, that is literally a physical representation of what that looks like to have your franchise and your idea and have nowhere to go with it. Nowhere to fucking go.
Dan, don't forget he turned into a little Asian kid, too.
He did! He really fucking did. And I don't know, like, did people have to wrap their minds around the fact that these properties, they're always going to be rebooted to a certain extent, you know? I think of Crystal Lake, and I think the most we ever see of fucking Jason's background is Freddy vs. Jason.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, really, and even that I thought was great, all that stuff. But they rarely get into the backstory. So with something like this, when he's just going full on, hey, I'm just me, it's a little abrasive at first when everybody's like, fuck, 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 you know? But it's
fuck
the
you,
same
faggot. Fuck you, clown. Right, right. My name's Luke Forsythe. I'm an over-the-top version of myself in Devil's Rejects. Fuck you. Your daughter has a dumper.
That's something like I actually wanted to talk to you guys about, too. You know, obviously Sherry Moon Zombie is the mother in this. And that's right. that was a big turnoff for a lot of people. And they're like, quit petting your wife in all your films, blah, blah, blah. Like, who cares what he does? It's his films.
People have been saying that for years. That's, yeah. That's fun to get.
And honestly, but she's one of the best performances in the fucking movie because she's at least not annoying.
But what I was going to say is, can you separate her from Baby Firefly?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, even her in, I just watched House of a Thousand Corpses the other night. Even her from the first movie to the second movie, she just has so much fucking range. And she's good. She's good at what she does. I mean, listen, if you are watching these type of movies, Rob Zombie's movies with his wife in it or whatever, and you can't get past that, then we just don't see on the same eye level. There are so many other problems that I look at before going to the performance of an actress, which in this case, I think she's really good. Like when they show those flashback scenes.
I'll give my opinion on that later.
Okay.
But for her in specific to this one, I mean, she was all right. You know, when she gets called down to, like, the principal's office and she's like, do you have to come down here every fucking 5 minutes? Like, right. I feel like that would be something a parent would do, you know?
Right. And then she keeps telling him, too, things are going to change around here. And you know what I mean? And she says it several times. And I think she's a bad mom? Yeah. I've seen worse, man. I've seen a lot worse, you know, at least she clearly loved her kids or whatever, but yeah. She probably felt overwhelmed and what the hell am I going to do with this? Because she had just found out about him killing the cats and all that kind of stuff.
It was that same day.
It was the same day. So she was probably like, shit, I got to get this kid in to fucking see a doctor and I'm going to do it. I think she had good intentions, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, Michael had other plans.
Now, do you guys like the aspect that Michael talks in this film? He hasn't talked in any other franchise, so Rob Zombie was like, I'm going to make Michael fucking talk. And not only am I going to make him fucking talk, he's going to fucking talk.
Right. Right.
So what do you guys think about that?
What, little chubby Hansen brother?
Oh, wow.
I'm just being mean today. He's all right. He's all right. You know, he just, like, when he screams, like, the clown mask on him, like, oh, God. You know, it's just so stupid, like, why he kills the spy kid's kid later. They get the newspaper clipping. It's a fucking from a newspaper. He could just get in. Anybody could get that. You don't have to share it around the school. You actually believe the fucking idiot kid?
Right.
Well, that's actually one of my favorite kills in the franchise, though. Like, I remember. I remember watching it. I seen it opening day. And I remember sitting in the theater, I was like, holy shit, this is brutal, I love it! Because he's just like fucking whack. Because it's something different, it's not something that we get seen in, you know, right. Anything else of Halloween. I mean, it obviously doesn't feel like Halloween to a lot of people, but like that, you know, the scenery of the fall leaves and like, yeah. I dug the backstory of this, I really like it.
Well, can I say this too? Rob Zombie, his sound design is incredible, and so is the soundtrack to all his movies. Like, even in this movie, I felt like,
I love
the soundtrack. Man, they got some songs on this soundtrack, God, you know?
Thunder.
Yeah, dude, and it's like, I don't know, like, stuff like that always elevates movies to me, and it's also an aspect to where I think the franchise was lacking for a while, you know? I don't know if they had too big of a hit in any of the previous installments. I mean, I know 5 was kind of music heavy, was it not? But I don't know. Like, up until this point, you know, they weren't really spitting fire, but on this one, I think he really was.
Well, yeah, I mean, it also goes to, like, the era of time that they were going for as well.
Right, right.
You know, so I thought that was cool. Now, Derek, you mentioned the clown mask earlier. Obviously, it's completely, it's still a clown mask, but it's a different look. Do you like the look of the clown mask in this one?
It fits the character, this type of character, more than the original Michael.
Like, just a cheap little plastic mask.
Well, he lives in a white trash neighborhood. That's all they could afford. It makes more sense. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not like, I'm going to buy my rich one at the hardware store like I did in the original. You know?
Give me some rope.
From the clown mask to, you know, this is where something changed as well, where we get the mask introduced.
Mm-hmm. That was weird.
Yeah, Judith's boyfriend, you know, he's like, I got something special. Which, he is like the ugliest fucking dude I've ever seen. But
oh my God, is he not, right?
I'm sorry.
He just, like, his face just looks like what, it just looks like a zit.
I don't know, I think it was his hair. It was like half mullet, half like party in front.
All he was staring at his nose.
You know, some people you look at and you're just like, I'll bet you that person hasn't showered in fucking days. That's the vibe I got from that dude.
Well, they did a good job then.
They did.
You know what's hilarious? Hilarious. Did you know this? That Judith's fucking Jenny from Forrest Gump, little Jenny.
Yeah.
Dear boy, drive me a plane. Make me a bird to fly, fly away.
Dear God.
Wow.
All right, so back to the mask, guys. So, like, him and Judith are, you know, banging. And he's like, I got something special for you. Close your eyes. So she closes her eyes. And he just puts on this ridiculous Michael Myers mask.
Right, right.
Now, do you guys like the look of this mask?
It's not as bad as H2O's mask.
Oh, Derek, why are you going after H2O?
Like, why couldn't you just go to Halloween 5? The discount store.
Ironically enough, Halloween 5 is one of my favorites in the franchise. Spoiler alert. H2O is a time capsule for me. It's just the mask is probably one of my things I judge in the movie, but I still enjoy watching it.
What about 6's mask then?
4 is probably the worst mask, to be honest, in the whole franchise to me.
You don't think 5 is?
No, he just said it's just one of his favorites.
It's
Nick Cage. Hey, yo.
What?
And Michael Myers. He looks like Nick Cage.
The mask is terrible, Derek.
That is one of the worst things I've ever seen, and that's Derek's favorite. That's crazy.
It's McCuffy Burns.
Excellent, Smithers. I am Michael Myers.
Yeah, I always thought H2O's was okay. It wasn't bad, in my opinion. But then, obviously, everybody goes to that one shot, too. And just the absurdity with the backstory of that, it's like, you can't even give him a pass.
Well, I'll be fair, too. Like, Resurrection's mask is worse than
H2O's. Oh, my God.
It is like his little afro here.
Yes.
It reminds me of that GIF of where, like, it has Michael Myers' face and it's, like, moving.
Yeah, the right.
Yeah, that's
right.
What it reminds
that's
me
it.
Of.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I kind of like the mask in this one for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not my favorite. You know, I don't even think... Have I ever even said what my favorite one is out of doing all of these?
No, we really haven't talked about it that much.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, we've always talked about the mask, but we've never talked about what our personal favorite is. That's just kind of rag on them all.
Like ranking them and all that? Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think what my... I really like 2018. I really do. I like the idea, the conception behind it of it, you know, being aged and being the original.
Right.
I think they did that really well.
That's actually one of my favorites, too, because it looks like aged William Shatner.
Well, and here's the thing. I talk to and see on Facebook a lot of people talking that are mask enthusiasts, mm-hmm. And that exactly is what happens to latex. So that's what it really would look like. Because I know when the movie came out, there was a lot of debate over that. Because people were like, that's what, it wouldn't even look like that. So a lot of people like actually showed it and like, this is from this is from 82. This is what it looks like. So yeah, like, you know. So that was cool. Like, I thought that one looked unique for sure. With this one though, I think that it fit the character. In this one, he feels like a beast. His size is so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Sabretooth up in there, for Christ's sakes. And I'm not talking about Cotton Weary either. But the thing is, it's like, it's so crazy to think about, you know, in any other context but this. But for this movie and for this universe, I think it's badass. He looks like a scary motherfucker coming after you. You know? That mask is just a part of it, though. Because he's just, his sheer size is enough to fucking scare the shit out of me.
Now, I have a question for you guys about that. Why is he so jacked? Does Smith Grove have a gym?
Right? Exactly. And I mean, yeah, we all know he's spending all his time making the masks, obviously. That's all he does.
Which, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the guy from Resurrection.
Right.
Like, it's like they took that idea and kind of made it into Michael.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I don't know, the serial killer guy, Harold.
Yes.
From Resurrection.
Yes.
The one you have the same body type as, Dan.
What do you mean? That's fucked up. Vince said a lot of things. But no, yeah, and exactly. And, who was it? Somebody said, what are they giving you? Smith Grove, wow, welcome. Here's your shot of steroids.
Yeah,
because yeah, it's the... I'm just
picturing, like, Clint Howard or Danny Trejo is shooting Michael up with steroids every day. I'm going to make you strong, Mikey.
Right? Well, also, too, I mean, you know, forget Halloween for a second. This is what Rob Zombie does. He works with great actors like that. You know, well-known actors that we all know. Maybe not everybody, you know, knows Clint Howard by name, but obviously everybody's seen him and everything. And he just has fucking people doing great little side roles that literally only have like fucking five lines. And that's one aspect of Rob Zombie that I've always enjoyed, you know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, stuff like that, like a Quentin Tarantino or something like that.
Now, did you like that he kept in the sibling story arc? I mean, obviously, we don't get that with the 2018, so, I mean, this is the last time we see them as siblings.
Correct. Yep. Me, personally, I don't know. I think that the way that this story goes, it's definitely part of the backstory, except you kind of run into the same problems. Because, you know, with that, but this one is much more, I think, it really involves the family aspect a lot. I think it's integrated in the plot through in a lot of different ways, and it's approached in a way where, you know...
Isn't the tagline, family is forever?
I believe, yes.
For Rob Zombies?
Yes, it is, exactly. And while in, obviously, the original Halloween 2 was just kind of a throwaway comment, in here, it's kind of assuming that everybody just knows this already, and they're going to double down on telling you that, and we're going to know this going into the sequel as well.
Yeah,
it's more developed in this film, which I do like that aspect of it more than saying, like, John Carpenter shit-faced when I'm just going to make a fucking brother and sister. Fuck this movie. I want to make another movie instead. Fuck this shit.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, let's talk about that Halloween night. Like, obviously, you know, they found out he's a little cat killer, and... So he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to go kill the, you know, little fire crotch from Spy Kids.
Right.
and then I'm going to go home. My sister Judith's not going to want to take me trick-or-treating. I'm having the worst fucking day. My mom needs to go to the strip club so I can get better candy than candy corn. I mean...
Then I'm going to feel up my sister.
Well, no, so then she doesn't take him trick-or-treating. He goes by himself, and then he's just sitting there. And he's, like, literally eating the worst candy that you could, like, get on Halloween. I mean, he's eating those, he's eating candy corn.
Yes.
He's eating, what was the elephant or peanut?
Oh, don't even say it. Yeah, I know. We all know. You already know.
Like, I mean, I would want to kill somebody after getting all that shitty candy as well.
Okay. I want to bring this up just because it's relevant somewhat to our lives. Now, last night we got a little specialty drink at the movie theater.
Yes.
And in this, it was obviously Halloween themed, and it had candy corn in it. Now, I will say that I can do maybe 3-4 candy corn max. And I figured that's like my sweet spot, you know? It's not like that it's the most horrible candy ever.
It's because it's pure sugar.
It's exactly, like, you can feel the sugar just melting, and it's exactly. Thank you, Derek.
Well, you did eat all of them.
They were like...
He ate them.
You had one.
I had one. So
there were like five. Four or five. Yeah. Yeah. So I had four. That was my max.
But he's like picking them out of the drink. I'm like, baby.
I like candy corn, but yeah, you're right. I can't eat them all. Like I'll eat some of them, and then I won't eat the rest of the bag until like maybe like a day later. That's the good thing about candy corn. It never goes bad.
You can just leave it out because it's already hard and just disgusting and waxy and
yeah. That was what I got in my trick-or-treat bag.
Right.
Yeah, if I got it for Halloween, I would be pissed. It's usually something I would buy for myself.
Yeah, I mean, I want, like, some Snickers. I want some Reese's, some Kit Kats, you know?
They give me
some Skittles.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm throwing it right back in the face.
Now, you know, it's funny. I kind of want to go back to that because we haven't really talked about this in any of them. Did you guys ever get anything like weird in your when you were trick or treating?
I always thought it was weird they gave you chips.
Chips? I got coal a few times.
What?
Yeah, and I would get like coal. Little like,
what kind of sick fucks?
Yeah, like Jehovah's Witness flyers.
That's
like,
not even the right holiday with the coal. Fucking
I got toothpaste.
Oh, yo, that's insulting. Yeah, like, how dare you?
Like, yeah, no, so like. I can totally relate to, like, so if anybody talks shit on the Charlie Brown special,
right,
like, of where I got a rock, like, I can fucking relate to that, so I get it, because people are assholes.
Right. That, yeah. Wow. That,
you know,
that is
that
horrible.
Literally happened. My sister will co-sign to that story. We're like, what's this?
I usually just go to one store and I usually go to one house and just change costumes because they sell the real candy bars, like the full-size ones. I'm like, all right, I'm changing this costume now.
Did you really do that?
Yes.
How many times would you hit it a night?
Like 4 or 5.
This thing, like, I remember sitting there, and this lady would not give us candy one time because she thought we were repeaters. And I was like, no. I was like, I've never been here before in my life. I'm like, give me the fucking candy. I'm like, this is a simple transaction. I'm like, I come to your door, I fucking ring your bell, and you give me candy, and I'm out. Like, it's simple. And, yeah, she denied us. She was just like, no. She's, like, looking at us. Like, I recognize you. We're like, fuck you.
Fucking Halloween trick-or-treater Nazis.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck?
All right, let's get back to the movie, guys.
America.
So, all right. So what did you think of the kills, you know, when he gets home and he kills Judith, the stepdad, and the boyfriend?
I wish the stepdad got it the worst because he was the most annoying character. Like, I love William Forsythe, so it's hard for me to say that. But he was just so over the top with his performance, it kind of
hurt. He was a baby hater.
Yeah, he was like, fucking shit that baby, yeah, fuck, I'm gonna fuck your daughter, and fuck you too, and fuck that faggot, fuck him.
Yeah, clean it up.
I want him to get the worst death, and he kind of gets the most pain-free death, because he just bleeds out.
Right. Well, I felt like it was kind of symbolic to maybe the Devil's Rejects a bit, you know, because he ties up, you know, the into a chair, the Firefly family, and, you know, like, it was kind of like the role was reversed a bit.
That is true.
It's kind of weird, too, because he's like, I see you there, clown, in both movies.
Oh, right, yeah, that same line, that's dope, yeah. When I watched it, you know, before this podcast, obviously, I did notice that I thought it was pretty effective that he just stared at him over his head, you know? I just thought it was a really creepy image. And I don't know, like, the way that these movies go, it's not even that you Yeah, you do. You kind of sympathize with Michael in a lot of ways because all these people are really fucking shitty. And then obviously, you know, he's a little fucking psychopath and he takes it too far. And you know,
he kills the animals.
I don't think his sister should have died either. Like, maybe that dude, like, don't walk into another man's fridge and just, like, take my lunch meats out. Like, bat to the head. Like, you're done. Like, I did like how it was a bat to the head, though, and he does switch it up with the weapons and stuff like that.
It wasn't just the straight up butcher knife.
It seemed organic, and you know, all these classic moments of him grabbing the knife and stuff like that. You know, the kid, Dig Farch, is it, whatever, he kind of treats it very nonchalantly, and I think that's good for a movie like this when you're trying to reinvent a character. Because if you're hanging on all these moments and trying to make them extra iconic, you know, as you're watching them, it's not going to work. You just got to go about it like, yeah, he goes in there, he grabs the knife, shuts the drawer. You know what I mean? Like, just nothing. And he's just like, he's still fucking chewing on his candy corn, you know, and he's just ready to go. So I just love that approach where it's just like, hey, we're just going to do this our own way. And we're not going to rely on, you know, these past iconic moments when Michael gets the knife, when Michael gets the mask. I thought the mask, having the boyfriend, having the boyfriend introduce it, I thought that was great. I thought that was better than him going into a hardware store that we don't see. You know what I mean?
And, then the cops just get there like sick. It's fucking so annoying for me when I watch the original Halloween. That alarm was going off when Laurie was all the time when Laurie was in school because he had the mask already looking out of the window.
Right.
Worst police ever.
Hence the police from 5. That was their standard by that point.
I think the cops just in horror movies suck in general.
They do. No, they do. And if you're always looking for like a, you know, social commentary, like you can look to this franchise in several different installments and the police play a big factor in it.
Yeah, for sure.
A non-factor, I should say.
Now, all right, so he butchers, you know, the people that are in the house, and, like, obviously the cops come, and, you know, they sentence Michael to Smith Grove.
Yes.
And so then we get, like, the little bit of the backstory of him being, you know, institutionalized, which is something that we only see in, like, little snippets,
right,
you know, in other films. So, like, we actually get to see, like, how he kind of shifts. But,
Gaining 300 pounds.
Well, what I didn't understand, though, is if he really is just like this cold, heartless killer that they're making him out to be, this is where it conflicts for me.
Uh-huh.
And this, you know, he says he doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember. I just want to go home. Like, is that just like him playing the innocence card?
Absolutely.
Or like,
100%.
Like, do you think he remembered?
Fuck yeah, he did. Absolutely. That
well, it depends on the way they went into it. Like, if it's a mental stability, because, you know, later on in part two, we see that he's seeing a lot of different things
right
in his head.
Right.
So maybe he has, like, another personality that didn't remember, and that personality consumed him more. Kind of like with the Boston Strangler story, where he had two personalities too, that killer, Anthony DeFeo. And, you know, it happens sometimes with killers like this. They don't remember because it wasn't him.
I think my theory, draw a reaction from you guys to what actually happens to him while he's institutionalized. And I'm going to blame it all on Danny Trejo.
And Lou Temple?
No, I'm blaming it on Danny Trejo solely.
Why? What do you mean?
What do you mean?
The nicest character to him.
He was...
No, it's all his fucking...
He was good to him, Lacey.
No, it's all his fucking fault.
I was good to Mikey.
No!
What do you mean?
Literally, so like, alright, so up until this point, Michael's still talking, right? And then all of a sudden you get like little creepy fucking Danny Trejo. What? Like, hey, Mikey.
Don't you ever disrespect
him. I just did. Now listen.
He says to him,
he goes, learn to live inside your head. No one can hurt you there. So then, like, after fucking Danny Trejo says that to him, Michael just shuts the fuck down, and then all of a sudden, like, the next day, he goes and kills a fucking goddamn nurse, and he starts wearing masks, stops talking. It's fucking Danny Trejo's fault.
baby.
Yep, that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
You just blew my shitter up.
He got drowned, too. Like, I thought, like, okay, they'll at least
Well, he
spare.
Turned off his humanity by saying that to him is what I feel. Like, you know, whatever but, little bit left.
But the way I see I could see that, too, but he's the most compassionate person to Michael in this movie, unfortunately, and that's what makes
happy, though.
And it's kind of weird that he gets the most mean spirit is death. He gets the worst death than William Forsythe in this movie.
He does.
Like, yeah. I felt bad about it for, like, the longest time, but up upon this last rewatch, that's when I kind of was like, well, maybe you shouldn't have fucking been talking to me.
It depends on what version of this, too, because, you know, if you watch the director's cut, you know, with the Lou Temple rape fucking scene character.
That's the one we watched, yep.
Yeah, that's the one I watched, too. Like, yeah, that I hated. I hate it so much.
Oh, it's brutal. It's so brutal. And it's like, I can't believe they're actually fucking doing this and getting away with it, you know? Even if it is on the director's cut, that was not in the theatrical release, was
no,
it not?
No.
I do remember seeing that and being like, yep, Lou Temple is going to die again. And sure enough, he did. Just like in everything else that he does. But no, that was brutal. But also, I mean, look, it's one of those things where you got to look at it like, if you don't enjoy this craziness, like, you know, in your Halloween movies particularly, just look at it like an Elseworlds situation, you know? And that's what you get.
Yeah.
We're getting to see a big event happen to which that aids him to break out of the asylum. We've never seen that. All we get in the original are those motherfuckers are already out fucking grazing like cattle, you know, and that's it. So I always would love to dig deeper into things that we all just have imagined happened, you know, back in the original and see it fully come to life in a remake or whatever, you know? And if you don't like it, just fucking reboot it again.
You know, about like director's cuts and everything like that. There was a scene that when I seen in the movie, I cannot find this scene to this day, and it has Bill Moseley.
That's the scene that they cut out of the put in with the Lou Temple rape scene.
Yep.
It's not on my copy. I cannot find it. But like
you can only get it in the theatrical version of the movie.
No, it's not on any of my copies.
Really?
Yeah,
The
only time I've seen this was when I seen it the one time in the theater.
Oh wow, yeah. And I do.
I remember, I was like, this is awesome.
You know what though? it's a good scene. It's like an action scene, and obviously it's got a bunch of Rob Zombie
alum.
Sarah Eisenberg, Tom Tolles, Bill Moseley.
Yes, and it's like, that's great. I don't know why that they would take that out and replace it.
Well, with they replace it, yeah, the rape scene. Yeah, that's the whole different scene. It's a theatrical version of them, which you could only, if you want to get an HD version, Canada actually has a double pack of both the theatrical versions of Halloween and Halloween 2.
An HD version of the rape scene, Derek?
No, without the one that with the scene that Lacey's talking about in it.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, it's a more obviously action-y scene. And I could see why, you know, depending on what you're going for. But yeah, that was kind of a weird, odd scene to cut, I thought.
And well, now I feel like we're kind of like in the second act of the movie. I feel like we got two movies in one in this one, and that's because you said it was supposed to be...
It was 100% supposed to be two different movies, yeah.
Yeah.
When they asked him to do two, yeah, the second half of the movie, which is essentially, you know, the original Halloween, that was supposed to be part two, and all the, all Michael as a kid and all of that kind of stuff takes place before, and obviously takes place in the first movie. So that was the original plan. But obviously, they were like, yeah, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah,
Weinsteins
were like, fuck that shit. All
right, yeah, so it was supposed to be two films. And, you know, the reason that I kind of like talking about this film is because it's something different than, you know, what we've been talking about the other films in the franchise.
Right.
You do have that backstory with Michael, because I feel like the kid in the original, like, nobody ever talks about him.
Right.
You know,
right.
And yeah. This one, you know, you fully talk about that little kid actor and everything. So we kind of get into the second half of the movie here, and you know, you get Scout Taylor Compton and as Laurie,
mm-hmm.
Dee Wallace as Mrs. Strode, Daniel Harris
as the husband,
right?
Daniel Harris as Annie,
yep.
Which you know, Rob Zombie said that, like, he wasn't he didn't have it in mind to cast her. She came in on audition, and he said she fits for Annie, so...
She's just so down for the franchise. Like, she's basically the face of it, besides Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
Yeah.
You know? She was part of that second wave. And I like when we talked to her, she was obviously really, really into it. You know what I mean? Like, she's never shied away from it. And, you know, they could put her in every iteration, you know, in some capacity, in all these movies forever, and I'd still be down, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that maybe, you know, this time around, maybe even they will. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like we have to, like, fully talk about this whole plot, since it's very similar to Halloween, so we'll kind of get into specifics.
Yeah, I do like how they switch up a few, like, way people... who survives and kills, and some of the kills, like, earlier in the movie, like the Linda kill.
Right.
Who, Christina Cub is Linda, too. I always liked her in, like, these type of movies. She's in one of my favorite B-movies of all time, Don't Kill It, with Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
I love that movie. Yeah, she's a good actress, too, for these type of movies. I like how they switch it up, and, you know, this is when they introduced him, my favorite character of these two movies, Brad Dourif as Sheriff Brackett.
Oh, dude, I gotta say, he's probably the best character, right?
Yeah.
He's gotta be. His acting, I mean, obviously, I like it in the first one, too, but come the second one, I mean, just, he is so damn good in these movies. And it's like, hey, let's step back here real quick. This is fucking Brad Dourif. Like, if you really break it down, like, we should not be surprised that he's giving us, you know, a great performance for a character like this. Like, we should be happy as fuck and embrace it, you know? Because I think that over time, you know, after all said and done, people will look back at these movies, at Rob Zombie's version, favorably in the future.
Yeah, sure. You know, when... I just love his version of Brackett. It's so different from the Charles Shipers, and he makes it his own, and how he builds, and I like, you know, he was part of, like, the mystery of what's going on. If you tell me to break a promise I made so many years ago, you're going to play my razor's edge. You know, I like the way he delivers lines, and it's great seeing him act with, like, actors like Malcolm McDowell. Who would have thought that Brad Dourif and Malcolm McDowell would be acting together? It's weird.
That's what I mean. It's crazy, you know? And I think, though, that Rob Zombie, as a filmmaker, enough people respect him, you know? And I know it's not everybody's fucking cup of tea. I totally get it. And for me personally, it actually took me a little bit to fully come around to his style, because it was so different, and I just didn't know how to take it.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I'm saying a lot of, like, negative things in these reviews, but I still really enjoy these films. It's just some aspects of them haven't aged well for me.
Right.
Some have aged a little bit more better. And, you know, it's just the way, that's the way we review movies, you know, it's the way we look at them. And, you know, maybe one day when I next watch these movies, I'll find other things that I liked more this review. You know, that's what I love about doing this. You know, it's great.
Right, yeah, no, some of our watches, our ratings fluctuate a lot, like, a lot, but we'll get into that at a later show.
Now, you know, in the original, like, obviously, Tommy and Lindsay were, like, a pretty big part, you know, and this one, they're very minuscule.
Right,
right.
But I'm very glad, because that little bitch who played Lindsay annoyed me to no end. She's like, I'm Queen Sheba. Okay, like, shut up. Like, you're going to probably grow up to be the most obnoxious person I've ever met. Like, you can just tell. Like, look, so there are some little kids you can just look at and be like, You're going to annoy me for the rest of your life if I was to know you.
And Tommy's just
you ain't
like,
going to grow up to be a real housewife.
And Tommy's dressed like he's the cult leader of the He-Man's Woman Haters Club.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and I am glad, though, that they minimized that. Unfortunately, like you said, too, that's this film's worst decision in making two movies into one. If we had more time and they could actually properly remake the first one and stretch it out, you know, mm-hmm. to a full-length movie, I think that obviously they would have gotten a lot more. But at the same time, having it packaged this way, I kind of like it. I don't need all the kid shit. We already get it. Like, we get it. She's babysitting. All right, mm-hmm. let's get it moving. Like, we've seen this a million times, and we've said it before, too. 78 stalking for fucking, you know, half the movie. It's just not going to work today. It's just not going to work. Like, give me something new. Give me something fresh. Like, make some exciting things happen.
Let's
that,
make
you know,
Lori sexually oppressed and she wants to fuck bagels and fuck things. She's humping.
Like,
dry humping. She's a dry humping.
I'm still upset about that bagel comment. Yeah. It's, yeah. It's, I don't know. I like a lot of it. And, you know, let's talk about Dee Wallace real quick. I mean, getting Dee Wallace, that's such another genre actor that, like, you know, people like us.
I'm sorry. I just can't think of her differently after Three from Hell.
After that one, yeah.
Like, that's, like, gone, like, off the deep end.
Yeah, I kind of try and blank that out of my mind. I'm not going to lie.
No, she's really cool in real life. She's awesome. But that movie, like, her role in that movie just, like, fucked with my head a little bit.
Right. And, again, you're getting to see more so of Lori's home life in this one as well, which we would never get to see. So, yeah.
It, like, she's very preppy, and, like, that's why it kind of speaks volumes to the next film.
Right.
But, this is literally the longest fucking ending to a movie I have ever, 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 ever sat through.
It just keeps going.
Was that the boogeyman? As a matter of fact, dear, it was.
Michael, no! What are you doing? You died already!
That was good, though.
No, actually, one of my favorite parts is Dr. Loomis in this movie, and it's when, okay, so, like, she escapes from the house from Michael.
Yeah.
You know, they have their confrontation, and this is after she's, like, trapped in the drained pool.
Right.
Like, where did that come from?
Right.
But, so, like, Dr. Loomis gets her into his car or whatever, and then all of a sudden, Michael, like, and he's like, you're gonna be okay. And, like, Michael smashes through the window, and, like, he's pulling, you know, Michael is pulling Lori out the window, and, all, like, Dr. Loomis literally goes, what the hell? He literally says, what the hell?
This wasn't supposed to happen.
Like, what the hell?
Well, and you know what's funny about that? He didn't tell him that Michael was going to do that, so he was actually surprised. So he
oh,
like,
really? So,
so
that was
so
really
that's why
hell?
That's
what
why
the
it
hell?
Was genuine.
Oh,
that he's
makes
like,
sense.
What the hell?
But that's like that's such a terrible thing to say. Like,
right?
Be for like a scary movie. Like, what the hell?
You know, and Malcolm McDowell's performance, you know.
Whether you like it or not.
I personally, I love it because he's so direct and fucking angry in it. And he's just like, where is he going? Haddonfield! Like, you can just feel it. Like, he's just so angry. He's like, you fucking idiots. He was like, Donald Pleasance told you before me. Now I'm here and I'm fucking screaming it. And I just love it.
I just wrote a fucking masterpiece of a book.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. I read that book. It's a masterpiece. Like, I love his arrogance. Like, and obviously that's a different take, too. But I would not really want to see anybody trying to fucking, you know, do a Donald Pleasance impersonation.
Yeah.
Like, I think about that, and
that's probably why they did what they did with Dr. Sartain as well. Like, they chose the opposite.
Correct.
Exactly what
I
it is.
I want to see him in his own environment.
Laurie Strode. But the thing is, it's like that even... I fucking hate that guy so much. But even that little voice clip in 2018 of Loomis that we got, I think that for these type of movies, that's as far as you can go. You're probably not going to want to fucking CGI him You're probably not going to want to. If you do have any flashback scenes or, you know, like, start off with, like,
Peter
one of the
Cushing
scenes that takes...
Peter Cushing style and, like, Rogue One, like, hello there, I'm Lucas.
Hey, if you're going to do something like that, make it very minimal and play with the camera where, obviously, you don't see their face until maybe fucking 2 seconds before you cut, something like that. That could work. But you're probably going to want to keep the Loomis stuff to a minimum just to obviously preserve, like, you know.
Now, this was a very sad-as-shit finale, you guys. You know, she comes out and she's got the gun.
Yep.
And, you know, she's pulling the trigger and it's not going.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, Michael comes up and, like, the gun goes off. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's it. That's, and then all of a sudden, like, it has, like, this montage of, you know, the life of where it looks like they're normal people.
Right.
The happier time.
Did you guys like this ending? Like, it's a picture of, you know, him and her. And she actually didn't know that they were siblings. We'll get into that in, like, 5 minutes. But she actually didn't know they were siblings because, remember, he's showing her the picture.
Yep.
And... Yeah. She's like, I don't know what you want from me. Let me help you.
Right.
Like, shut up. but I like her as a person in real life.
Yes. And I watched that scene, too, where she's talking to her dad about dropping off the Myers key.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very kind of nonchalant. So, like, again, like, same mistake. It's like, why would he send her over when he knows that she's got a relation to him?
Now, we've also talked about throughout this entire retrospective franchises, whether we think Michael is intelligent or not. Obviously, like, this is kind of a different character because it's rebooted.
Right.
So, I'm going to say, no, he's not. This is the first time I'm saying no.
Yes.
I don't think he's smart in any capacity. I think, like, he has... animalistic instincts, maybe.
Yep.
I think he does kill people that are deserving to die in some aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think, like, he had some humanity in him. But do I think he's intelligent? Because, I mean, the choices that he makes aren't really smart. Like, it's more like a big dumb jock.
Right.
I'm going to say no. What do you guys think?
I don't know, because he still has personality in this one, which is another thing where... You're like, I'm going to put this ghost sheet on me, you know? You know,
right.
Shocker, you know? So, it's a little... He does things a little bit more... But he's, like, looking at it. He knows, like, to look into the walls and shit. He knows to look into the ceiling. It's common sense thinking. So,
right.
I think he does have some thought in there. I don't know how intelligent he is because of all the years he's been stuck in that fucking room making masks. But at least I think he recognizes and hears things and, you know, common sense... intellect, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh, and absolutely. I mean, all we've ever known from this character is that opening scene as a kid when they take and he kind of looks confused and anxious and he doesn't know what the hell's going on. So we get to literally see the progression from the jump, you know, and obviously, what is it, nurture versus nature? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Whether,
mm-hmm.
you know, And I think that for him, he was doubly fucked. He probably had something hereditary going on. And then add in bullies, fucking William Forsythe as your stepfather. Like, that's going to fuck somebody up. And obviously, you know, and I think that he was just a sick little fuck, you know, regardless. Like, everything can contribute to that one. You know, he didn't have a chance, basically. And so now... The story, the narrative changes to where we see a personality and then it disintegrates into nothingness. And it's that disintegration that's the real question because it provides context to the second half of the movie when he is silent and he's back to that Michael Myers that we all know.
That Danny Trejo.
So, yeah, exactly. So, obviously, we know that he's coherent, that he's lived a life where, yeah, like, he's talked to people and yeah, had full intelligence in that aspect. But it's a conscious decision of his, in my opinion, that he just shuts down and he's becoming the fucking killer shark, as we like to say here, cut to the chase, that we all know and love.
All right, so let's get into our final ratings for Rob Zombie's Halloween 2007. Derek, what you got, boo?
Like, you know, I did say a lot of negative things, but I still really enjoy this movie for what it is, because you gotta respect what he did. He tried to change it up. It's just some of, like, the characters do annoy me in this.
Right.
You know, it's like, do you have to be redneck in every movie, Rob? But I understand, you know, it's just weird because he was just coming off Devil's Rejects and did this. So, you know, it's like, I didn't really need that. And, like, yeah, Jules knows what I'm talking about, you know. But I still enjoy it for what it is. You know, it has some brutal kills. It has some sadistic moments. I really love the cinematography of this movie. And the musical choices. The cinematography is great. I love that long shot of Michael just sitting there with a candy, you know, his candy box and shit. And like, love hurts. You know, I love all those scenes. It blends well with, like, the stripper scenes of Sherry Moon. I love that whole section of the movie. Really great stuff, you know. And I can't really hate a movie that has Richard Lynch as the principal.
You said, fuck me. Fuck me.
You know?
Mrs. Myers. Do I have to cut that out here?
Mrs. Myers.
And then I just actually talked about Richard Lynch on another podcast recently where he ripped a baby doll's head off. So I'm like, Michael, you better not tell that guy to fuck him again because he'll fucking rip. You know?
You over there? You over there? Get over there, man.
You know, but I really enjoy this movie for what it is. It tries to incorporate things that we loved about the original Halloween while making its own thing. And I think it succeeds for the most part. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 stars. I really do enjoy this film. And, you know, it does have some faults for me, though, with the characters that kind of hurt it for me. But I still overall enjoy it.
Yeah, right on. What about you, Jason?
You know, I like this one quite a bit. It's definitely falls in the upper half of my ranking.
Yeah.
It's probably like 4 or 5 for enjoyment level. I really like what they did with the backstory. I know a lot of people don't, but I do.
Right.
Because I think he did it well, and I understand it. You also get to see, you know, a topless Daniel Harris, which, you know, we didn't talk.
Win for everyone.
Exactly. I mean, that I love that scene where, you know, like, it showed it in the trailer, but, you know, when she runs out topless and, like, he just grabs
her back. Yes.
And I love that scene. It's very kind of reminiscent of, you know, Leatherface grabbing, right. You know. So, I don't know. I really like it. You know, there. I kind of like Dr. Loomis as well. I think he's funny.
Right.
Like, he's fun to make fun of. I mean, what the hell? I'm gonna give it a
4.
I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. You know, I'm probably leaning more to a 4. I really enjoy this movie. Here's to say that, like, it's not that I don't see the flaws in it. To understand what happened in terms of, you know, him not being able to do his own thing with it, unfortunately. Understanding that, I see what he was going for, and I just really dug it all around. I think that people get caught up on, you know, canon and Mike Myers ever does this and all these type of things. And I think that now, more than ever, in 2020, we should realize that nothing is permanent, you know? They may go on with this storyline if you know, if it's financially, you know, if it's financially doable and it's, you know, making them lots of money. But it's just one of those things where it's always going to get rebooted, you know? Nothing is final. If they do give them a couple, they'll give them a few, you know? Give David Gordon Green 3, give Rob Zombie 2, and you can kind of play with it, you know? And I don't see people getting mad over the fact that you know, all the franchise has been ruined. No, it's not. Just fucking reboot it again. It doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
Just do it.
Do it.
So you're a 4 out of 5?
4 out of 5, yeah. I really dig this movie. This is much like the AMC movies back in the day, like 4 and 5 used to be playing on TV. With this one, they would play it on Spike a lot.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would just let that bad boy run. They do Halloween marathons on there and just play the shit out of those movies. So, yeah, man, I saw that movie in the theater. I love Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Right on. All right. And we are continuing on with Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. I'm going to read the synopsis here.
Yeah.
Let's see how accurate this one is. Michael Myers is still at large and no less dangerous than ever. After a failed reunion to reach his baby sister at their old home, Laurie Strode is immediately taken to a hospital to be treated by the wounds that has been inflicted by her brother a few hours ago. However, Michael isn't too far off and will continue his murdering Halloween rampage until he gets his sister all to himself.
Oh.
As I like to call this movie Hobo Myers.
He's like a road warrior.
He is. He is indeed. Now, this movie is so different, even from his first one.
Yeah, it's very divisive, too, in the horror community. People either really love it or they fucking absolutely hate it. I don't think there's an in-between with this film.
I'll actually say that I'm somewhere in between. Because,
of course, you just have to be.
But here's the thing. In order to come out on the plus side of that, though, is you have to take it for what it is and appreciate the fact that he's just taking this thing fucking completely off the rails.
I also think it depends on which version of this movie, because this is the first time I actually seen the director's cut of this movie for this watch.
Okay.
And I got some things to say about the actual very end of the movie.
Yep. Oh yeah, no, big stuff with that ending. Big stuff.
Before we get into that, I actually kind of want to talk about, you know, how they do bring back, you know, Sherry Moon Zombie, Mrs. Myers, but, like, obviously in a ghost, obviously she killed herself in the first film because she realized her son was a monster and, like, everybody else in her family was dead and, you know, her baby was taken away. But the reason that this bothered me so much is the fact that obviously too much time had passed between this one and the other one, and obviously the little boy who played Michael Myers in the first film grew way too big.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's very apparent that it's a different Michael Myers. So, in that aspect to me, I say, why bother to do this plotline at all?
Michael Myers.
Yeah, that's the only negative thing I got to say, but then the flashbacks is the new kid playing the young Michael Myers. He's like, hey, I know you. You're my mom.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what it feels like in his performance and shit. And yeah, I get it totally. I still think Sherry Moon's good with everything she does in those scenes. Either way, it's just the kid feels kind of awkward because they didn't have a connection like, say, like the kid from the first movie and her did.
Correct. And I think her performance is so strong that to open the movie with that scene of her and him in the asylum, I think that that kind of spoke volumes to not only where this movie is going to go, but remind us that, like, hey, you know, this is the character that we met in the last movie. Obviously, we know what happened after that. But this ghost version or whatever, I never saw the point either. I completely agree. I do think that, like, some of it was so ridiculous feeling that, like, there was one point where I just fucking started laughing out loud. He kills someone, and then it's all three of them standing over the body, and Sherry Moon's just so wide-eyed. And it's just like, what the fuck are we watching?
I kind of get it. It's kind of like his inner mind talking to her. That's what the little boy version of him represents.
Absolutely. And it's not that I don't get it. It's the fact that it's how it's used. It's just like, okay, like, this is what we're doing with this character now. And you're either on board or you're not.
Yeah.
And I go back and forth with it, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I watch it and it really bothers me. Other times I'm just like, I take it for what it is because I really do enjoy a lot of aspects of this film as well that we'll get into, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, I really liked, you know, the opening aspect of it taking place at the hospital.
Right.
Because I was like, yes, we're getting another hospital movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, if you heard our first, our review on, you know, Halloween 2, 1981, which is my favorite, you know, I think I love it when things happen in a place you feel the safest.
Right.
And a hospital always seems like it's a safe place.
Correct.
So, I was like, yes, you know, but nonetheless, it turns out to be a dream.
Right. Well, that dream sequence, though, that's great on for a couple things. First of all, the kills, one of the kills being Octavia Spencer. Yeah, that was cool.
You know, did you notice in the movie, though, that Caroline Williams, when they're sitting there, or when she's talking to, you know, Octavia Spencer, she goes, Octavia. She actually calls her Octavia.
No way.
Like, but she's credited as really? Nurse Daniels.
I didn't know.
It's not Octavia Daniels.
No
it's,
shit.
Yeah, Caroline Williams literally calls her Octavia.
Again, another reason why I love Rob Zombie. He's such a horror movie fan that, like, yeah, you know, he does, like, the dream casting in his mind, you know? Then, like, I'm making a Halloween movie. Okay, I want every fucking horror actor and actress in it then.
It's just fucking hilarious that Richard Reilly is a fucking teddy bear in this
movie. Oh, dude. You know, and when we interviewed him, we didn't even really talk to him about Buddy, the security guard. But yeah, we should have. Like, and that's a fucking scary-ass scene, too. Like, I'll say this. Nothing really, like, scares me these days. But that scene in the shack is pretty fucking shocking, you know? I personally, it's one of those rare situations where when I was watching it, I did not think initially it was a dream sequence until she woke up.
Yeah, I
thought that was really fucking happening. I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna kill her.
Her bandages were pretty awful though, so I mean.
Yeah. Well, hey, we didn't talk about this much, obviously, in the last one, but Scout Tara Compton, what do you guys think of her performance?
Well, it's definitely different from
this one.
It's
more over the top in this one than it was. Well, it makes more sense why it is. Right. It's just, you know, when she just starts screaming and dropping F-bombs out of nowhere in this one, it's like, whoa, what the fuck? Shut the fuck up, bitch. You should be at... And you know, when she's yelling, get out of my room! I'm like, this is her house! Fuck right? You, Star Taylor Compton. In this, you know, like, really, you know?
Like, she takes PTSD to, like, a whole new level. Like, people bitch about, you know,
Jamie Rambo Lord, Rambo Lord.
Yes, and then you get Scout Taylor Compton in this one, and it's just completely...
Well, but here's the thing, though.
I need my pills!
With all that Rob's...
Give me my jelly beans!
With all the swearing, obviously, incorporated in Rob Zombie's movies, they do take a different tone when Rob Zombie tries to take a different approach to it, which is obviously like PTSD, like you just had some fucked up shit happen to you. What is it, a year or 2 years later?
I think it was 2009, right?
Yeah. So it was just one of those things where, again, a drastically different look, but I'm okay with that, you know? Nothing is forever. If I get
family
my,
is, though.
Family is, baby. If you get that out of it, then great, you know? That's awesome. And then you can move on, and you don't need to explore that world any further. I think that for what he did, though, and for what story he told, he said enough different stuff with his movies that I think that they definitely stand out above a lot of the other sequels, which weren't saying shit.
Now, see, this is where I get kind of confused with going back to the dream a bit.
Okay,
so like she, like so that whole opener, like so none of that happened. So like when Richard Brake, who you know that is Richard Brake, right? In the car, and he's talking about fucking Linda's dead corpse.
Oh yes.
Yeah, like he just screams dirtball to me.
Yeah.
You know,
I love him. And I actually just watched him recently on fucking the movie Doom, and he plays a skis bag in that movie.
Oh, he is in Doom. I fucking love Doom.
But say that I was like super confused of whether. So did that scene, like, was she dreaming that part as well?
No. They don't do a job to build up to the dream. It's just, I think it's everything, like, after the surgery.
When she gets to the hospital?
Totally. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Same. Yeah, see, I was always really confused on that,
yep.
So thanks for clearing that up.
Yep.
There was one thing that, some of the dialogue in this, you know, obviously they drop a lot of F-bombs, but it's a little bit kind of tacky, and Brad Dourif, has maybe one of the most asinine lines in it, because the guy was like, well, I'm pretty sure it's obvious what happened here tonight. And he was like, I don't think anything was obvious about what happened tonight. Well, I'm pretty sure it was fucking Michael Myers, dude. So I think it was obvious. But I mean, like, obviously there's just like filler lines.
I remember that line, and I remember thinking, I'm like, huh? Like, it just didn't fit.
I don't think anything was obvious about what happened here. What do you mean? Michael Myers broke out, killed Danny Trejo.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then went after the guy, or went after the little girl that you took away, and right. You know.
And we forgot to mention, too, he killed somebody trying to take a shit to get his outfit. Poor bastard.
That mask right off your face.
Now, I did like the fact that Annie survived in this.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, because you do think she's like a goner in the first one. But I liked the fact that she was alive here.
Okay, here's one thing, too, that I've always thought of. And, you know, it just kind of reinforces that Rob Zombie loves horror movies. And obviously, he loves what he's doing, right? So, if he's casting Danielle Harris again and taking this kind of a leap, this much of a left turn with his characters to follow Annie's journey from the first one to this one till the very end, to the point where you're seeing, you know, old pictures of Danielle Harris, an actress which grew up in this franchise. We're seeing like little kid pictures of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry, but he just knows what the fuck he's doing. Like, he's literally like preaching to us horror fans, obviously. But man, that was so effective and probably one of the most emotional
death
moments. One of the most emotional deaths and moments with those pictures.
The montage, yeah.
And of the whole franchise, I think. I mean, what can top that, you know? I mean, I get excited as fuck when Jamie Lee Curtis takes that axe to Michael's head in H2O. That's like a jump up moment. This is more like your heart's being ripped out moment. It's so sad. And I don't think that it's got to be the most emotional moment throughout the entire series.
Yeah,
you think
for
that?
Sure. Yep. Yeah, for sure, especially with like the way that Brad Dourif is emoting his pain
about
losing his daughter.
She's so good. I honestly think it's one of Brad Dourif's best performances, honestly. I think that like he was so fucking good in this movie, but then like you said, Lacey Lou, there are some cringeworthy lines as well.
Yeah, but I mean, there are other things that like make up for that as well. I mean, in a lot of sequels, you don't really get to see, like we talked about Dr. Loomis's scars,
right,
his burn scars, and you know, the previous films, you know, to where it kind of disappears and or like it like morphs and it's just not very good. I feel like their scars were like very accurate, like Lori and Annie. I like that they,
yeah,
you know, like it, like they're kind of almost like deformed to
like,
a point.
She's got that face scar.
Yeah, like
yeah,
they both do. And
yes, yes,
you know, so obviously like that's gonna affect their mental state of, you know, how they are. Like
totally.
They were very preppy in the
right
first film, and now they're both kinda like gritty and like
did you believe that jump? That's an important question, I think.
I think it's I mean, I believe Scout Taylor's you know, I can see her going that way because she was kind of like, you know, a humper aggressor. So I can see that she was, you know, would be like that later.
Yeah.
But with the thing is, like, Annie became like a hermit.
Right.
Like, you don't see her leave the house at all.
Yeah, she's kind of like Lori in 2018 in a way, in that sense.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way I always say PTSD or, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder always affects people differently.
Oh.
And people react differently to it. That's all. Go ahead, Lacey.
Yeah, no. Yeah, they both have different variations of how they're coping with their past traumas.
Right, and I don't think that... I think as an audience, it's sad to watch the characters go in that direction, and that's why everybody feels kind of like gross about it and watching it. It's like, man, this is really depressing. I do believe it's accurate, and I can totally see that jump, you know? I've had events happen to me in my life that completely changed my thinking altogether, just one event, you know? And it can completely derail and change the course of your entire life. And, you know, you're talking about, like, depression at this point, like you said, PTSD in the worst sense, and all these probably underlying things that are... It's on screen, you know? I mean, he gets into it, and she's obviously self-medicating, too, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, I don't know, man, I believed it. It was really sad to see, but I was trying to make sure that I made myself differentiate the sadness from whether I liked the movie or not. Because it bums me out, but I still have that appreciation that they're going a different route and actually trying to say something.
Well, see, I can get on the bandwagon of, you know, how different Annie and Lori are in this film.
Totally.
But the jump that Dr. Loomis makes as a character.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I like it. I do. But I would have liked it more had he been more of that character in the first one. Like, if he was more like Gil Weathers.
Right.
You know,
right.
He was very Gil Weathers in this one.
Right.
And I think that's a good, you know, analogy there, absolutely. Comparison. Because the thing that, I think the main line that stuck out to me in this one for that pisses me off about the character jump for Dr. Loomis is when they're like, well, they never found Michael's body. And he's just like, okay, whatever. You know, like, I can't remember the exact line, but, like, he didn't care.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but he was, like, devoted to, like, Michael, like, in the first film. And as opposed to this one, he's just like, I just want to write a book and get famous.
Well, to be fair, he's kind of always... You see, like, hints of it in the first movie, but he's kind of this character. You know, like, he's talking about, like, his book being a fucking masterpiece and shit. You know, like, his first book that he wrote a whole book about this kid that he studied and made money off of. He's still a money launderer in the first movie. It's just more over the top in this one.
Right. Right.
Like, well, because he reached a certain level of fame, obviously.
Yeah.
But, and exactly.
But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't buy that he would be, like, I think he would be more.
Well, he's trying to put it in the past, too, what happened, too. You know what I mean? Like, fuck it, I'm not going back there.
Well, I thought his eyes got poked out in the first one, but I guess not.
Okay, here's my problem with the Loomis character in this movie. It's a complete side story. It's not him tracking Michael anymore. What it is, you know, him being like, hey, I'm a shithead, but in the last fucking 5 minutes, I'm gonna go redeem myself, and then he goes to the fucking place. And it was just like, because he saw it on TV, and he was just like, I'm like, what? I'm like, that's what you're doing with that? Oh, okay.
He's like, I'm sick. He's like, I'm sick of doing shows at Weird Al.
Right, exactly, yeah, like,
he's all pissed off walking out. He's like, I've never been more
embarrassed
in my life.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments, though, is when he's doing the book signing.
Right.
And, you know, the crazy eye guy comes up and he's like, there's always one of them. And then, you know, I think it was a great segue in to bring in, you know, a guy who looks completely normal, non-white trashy.
Right.
And he hands him the book and, you know, there's a picture in there.
It's Christina Klebe's dad.
And it's a picture of Linda. He's like, do you recognize her?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, obviously it shows you, like, how disassociated that Dr. Loomis really is.
Right.
Like, all right, so you wrote about it, but you don't fucking recognize her?
Right.
Like, I love that scene. I thought it was a great throwback to her character, because obviously you still have Lori. Because Linda's always kind of, like, the lost one between... you know, Lori and Annie, because Sheriff Brackett, you know, is her dad, and you know, Lori's a star. Linda's kind of just like, well, what the fuck happened to her? So I kind of, I love that, you know, you get her brought back in that aspect.
Right, right, exactly. In the first movie, you're sleeping with her boyfriend a lot and stuff like that, so yeah. Yeah, and I also think, too, that I just didn't feel like it was organic to the script, except the fact to redeem himself. And to follow his journey on a complete side adventure, a complete side plot of him going to hotels and having an assistant that he's fucking rude to.
Yeah.
It was so odd. I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
The weird thing about H2 is you're actually following like three side stories. You're following Lori and following Michael, and you're following Loomis, and all three of these characters meet at the final climax of the movie.
It's so stupid. It's so contrived. It's like, you might as well fucking get Dr. Sartain to fucking steal a cop car and drive him right up to your fucking front doorstep. You know, it's the same kind of fucking thing. But, I don't know, this movie, though, it's so out there that I can't help but appreciate it when I watch it, you know?
This
and
is like the House of a Thousand Corpses version of Halloween.
Correct.
Like Devil's Rejects is Halloween 1.
Right.
Well, I mean, it has, like, maybe one of the grossest scenes is when, you know, Lori's eating the pizza and then, you know, Michael's needing to eat, so he's eating off the dog.
Right.
And, I don't know, it's just so gross to me. I hate that scene. Like, people look nasty.
My favorite scene's in the strip club, though, when he kills Daniel Roebuck. <It's> like, I love Daniel Roebuck's character. And, you know, Daniel Phillips' character, I hope you get herpes, old man. You know, like, it's fucking so skeezy. He actually plays two characters. He plays the stand-up comedian later in the party.
Yes! at the party. Yep, yep.
Yeah, I actually really like that party scene.
He's the guy I call Caveman.
Yeah. Great.
Do you guys like the Halloween costumes in this one? Do you like the party?
I love it.
I love how that all three of the Lori and her new girlfriends are like dressed as Rocky Horror Picture Show characters. Like she's Patricia Quinn from Rocky Horror. And I don't know the actress's name or the character, I forget the character, but it's the girl who plays Tina from The Final Girls, who plays the Tim Curry character, and she's the slutty one. It's so funny that she's fucking Tina from Final Girls. I'm like, why does this girl look so familiar? I'm like, oh, it's Tina, the slut girl from Final Girls.
Right, and with her and Wolf Boy there, he had a couple funny lines.
The whole scene before they get fucking killed.
Well, yeah, okay.
That's probably my favorite aspect of this movie.
Thank you, and that's what I was gonna say, Lacey. To your point, you know, we talked about the party scenes before, and we don't even get one until what, we said 5?
Yeah, a party. So
we get a party at 5, and party of 5. And we see that one, and it's a good one. It's not bad at all. It's a solid one. Even old ladies like to attend and sit in the corner. But until now, it's like the party to me. It's like, okay, it's on Halloween night, and these characters are trying to blow off some steam.
Right.
In this case, with Lori, she stopped by and read Loomis's book, to which then she finds out.
Angel Myers.
And you actually get a name for her, like her adopted name.
Right, exactly. And that...
What a stupid name.
See, this, though, this kind of begs the question, too, like, okay, are we starting to go down a road here? Because then she starts really unraveling. She was already in the first place.
Right.
Then you add this piece of information in, and that's where it kind of starts to be a slippery slope. So when the party scene comes in and they're looking to blow off some steam, it's not just, hey, we're out partying. You know, in a lot of horror movies, it's like, yeah, people are dying, and like, you know, look at Scream, for instance. Like, people are dying. Let's go to a party and still do it. With this, you felt the weight of what the characters were going through going into that party as well. So when everything goes down and everything, it felt very effective and it felt very real to me.
Yeah, see, I think part of it, the reason that this movie, like, confused me, I keep saying that a lot, this movie was very confusing to me, guys. I thought somehow that, you know, it was all, like, she was imagining that Michael was still alive, and I thought she was the killer.
Okay.
Like, I mean, she comes out in the mask at the end, and, you know, I mean, it could have been her, I don't know.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know if Michael actually existed in this one, or if it was a fragment of her. Like, that's how I perceived this fucking movie.
He exists.
Well, he talks.
I mean, listen, I guess you could look at it that way. I personally don't see it that way. But as far as the character, and like I said, her being kind of pushed to the brink and pushed over the edge, especially with the news of finding out that she is his sister, all these things kind of contribute to the end and her mental state and kind of where they left it. They also left it fucking ambiguous as shit,
with
too.
Her in the...
Intentionally.
With her in the
Smiths
Grove. She's in
Smiths Grove. Is she in Smiths Grove? Or is she dead?
It could be heaven or hell. Yeah, this ending can be dissected for hours. It depends on which version of the ending you watch, too, because if you watch the theatrical version, which, honestly, I wish they had Loomis's death in from the theatrical version of the director's cut, because it's so much more fucking brutal, because he stabs him, like, 55 times.
Right.
And then froze him like a fucking ragdoll. Yep. That's when it's just one stab. It's like, die! Ugh, that's so cheesy. That's the only thing of the director's cut ending I fucking hated is Loomis's death. Like, it's so like, whoa, one stab, that's it? You know, and then Michael gets shot up, and I actually kind of like how they killed him in the theatrical ending. Just impaled him with fucking spikes. It's like, wow. They pitched, this is way more of a more lazy ending. It's like, what?
Compared to everything else that had happened through this movie.
I like the theatrical ending a little bit better, but it does give you that interpretation of what the director's cut ending means. because you see Laurie get shot, spoiler alert, you know, she gets a, you know, did she get shot or not, and, you know, is she dead or alive still? That's the aspect of the director's cut I do actually like, because it's either, because you see all the white hallways, and it could be light or, you know, interpreted in heaven, because she's an angel, because right. her name's Angel. It's all it's all metaphorical in the end of the day.
See, I don't know. I still think she was the killer, but that's okay.
Well, okay, so if you look at it this way, though, when they're in that little shack, and can she see Sherry Moon Zombie? Like, first of all...
Well, she's talking to her.
How does she know what she looks like? I'm like, there's pictures.
She probably saw pictures in the book.
Yeah, Loomis would do a picture book, yeah. But not only that, though, it's like, I don't know, when you ever talk about delusions in movies and how it pertains to one character, that's fine. But then when you have other people, like, with shared delusions, that's where it gets really kind of, I think, muddled and kind of confusing, because it's like, all right, well, whose perspective is this really from, and how do they, you know, is this supernatural? Like, are we talking about supernatural aspects now?
Well, it's kind of like that aspect, too, which goes back to Halloween 4 and 5, unfortunately, where, you know, Jamie and Michael and those movies have, like, this psychic connection, in a sense, and I think that's what they were trying to explain here, like, maybe, like, since they're a family of maniacs, they all have, like, this psychic bond with each other.
Right. Right.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, and I personally, I don't like that aspect at all. I think that that's where this movie really fucking went off the rails. I think that Rob Zombie's a really, really, really good filmmaker, but mm-hmm. the thing is, he's not gonna go down as one of the all-time greats, in my opinion, because he just throws a lot of dumb shit in his movies.
Something dumb that he doesn't do is his music, and I really like the music in this one as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like that opening where, you know, she's in the hospital and it's, I love you.
Right.
Like, I mean, it just, like, lingers, and then I really like the rendition at the end credits of, you know, Love Hurts. Because, like, it is such a softer version of it. Because mm-hmm. It's like, love hurts, love scars, and, like, all their scars, and that's, like, it just came, like, full circle in that moment for me when I was watching the end. And I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't love this movie, but I love that part.
No, well, let's talk about that song. For me, personally, I hadn't heard a song for probably years prior to that. That really fucking moved me. Like, I heard that, and, like, it was completely, like, emotional. And when I said the scene about, you know, Annie being the emotional scene in it or whatever, I could see this being so many different things for people that I felt like this was just, like, gut-wrenching. And, like, yeah, the way that it's sung and its somberness, I fucking love it. I think it works perfectly. Obviously, like Derek said, too, it was featured in the first one, too, so it's a callback to that song
mm-hmm.
in Rob Zombie's first one.
It's a different rendition, yeah.
Different rendition, obviously, and it just, it fits the feel of the movie,
mm-hmm.
it fits that shot, you know, it fits that whole sequence, and it's probably, honestly, and I think I can honestly say this, it's probably one of my favorite endings to a movie.
Yeah.
Alright.
Is that shot accompanied with that song, along with, like, you know, others like Trainspotting 2? There's a lot of instances where
that's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's really good.
You really
good,
like
though.
This movie.
I
so
really
why
do.
Why don't you get into your rating?
Okay.
I'll go ahead. Yeah, go ahead,
Dan. No, Derek, you go first. Go.
This might be shocking to some people, but I actually like this film a lot more than the first one. I love the kills more in this one. They're more brutal. I love, you know, like, that head stomp that he does to Jeff Daniel Phillips, like, bang! Crushes his head, and then he breaks fucking Daniel Roebuck's arm. You see him, like, swirling, oh! His arm ain't dangling. I love that. They're so more brutal. It's so more mean-spirited, this movie. You know, even with, like, the dog shit, which, you know, I hate when animals die in movies, but at least it's not a real animal in this case, so that's good at least.
Well, yeah. Hey, it's funny, we just saw The Thing.
Yeah.
Derek in the theater, and Lacey Lou was watching the whole dog part, and she was just like, what do you mean? And I'm like, it's actually not a dog, though.
But it is a dog.
But it's a thing.
It's the thing. We'll talk about that later. But I hear you. I know it's like, whoa, what the hell, dog? You know.
So what do you rate Halloween Rob Zombie?
I give it a 4 out of 5. I really enjoy it. I think it's the cinematography is beautiful in the movie. I love the musical choices. And we forgot to mention, Tyler Bates does a hell of a job incorporating John Carpenter's original themes with his own stuff. I really love Tyler Bates. One of my favorite composers of the decade. His score for like movies like Slither and Guardians of the Galaxy. Mwah! I love all that shit. Fucking love it.
Tyler Bates, his name's over everything, man. He's definitely a master for sure. You know what's funny about it too? About the score? It seems seamless in these movies, in these Rob Zombie ones. And you would think that Rob Zombie would actually do something more that sounds like the 2018 one, kind of over-the-top themes and, like, in-your-face and really loud, which they did in 2018. You would think that Rob Zombie would have more of a stamp on that classic thing, but I think that he did it seamlessly, and I think, like Derek said, incorporated it with his new stuff too, and it worked great. I thought that the music was always on point. The sound design in these movies I always thought was really effective. I really dug it. So, yeah, I agree with Derek. My rating at this moment is a 4 for Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
I am pretty far apart from you guys, I feel. but when I originally watched it, it was like, it was almost unrateable. Like, I absolutely hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I've come around a little bit because there are aspects I do enjoy of it.
Yep.
Take out the fucking white horse. Take out the dream sequences. Just make it like a straight up real fucking movie and you have me. You know, it's just too muddled for me.
Right.
But there are things that I do like. You know, I like the hospital. I like the fact that Annie survived. I like the fact that she died.
Right.
Like, I love the scars. I love the callback to Linda. You know, there are little... I hate Road Warrior Michael. I hate the white horse. I hate the sweet little boy that's supposed to be evil playing Michael.
Are you a giant?
I hate Michael Myers talking in this. I didn't mind, you know, the little boy talking, but like him as a giant, I don't like it.
Die! Die!
Yes, it's the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, he spoke in this one.
And like when they're just staring up at the billboard of, you know, the Devil Among Us book, Dr. Loomis.
Oh,
like,
God.
I fucking, like, that scene went on for so long as well. Like, these movies are very long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy the party scene. I wish we had gotten more of that feel.
Right.
Of, you know, the real life shit of, you know, wreaking havoc of the party scene. Like, I wish that it could have either taken place at the hospital or a party or, you know, like, I didn't care about her discovering that she's now his sister. Like, it was just too much and over the top.
Right.
I do like the music, but it's too muddled, 2.5.
2.5, okay. That, you know what, though? That's fair. And everything that you've said, like, I completely agree with. And I think that everything that we've talked about that we do like as well,
it's on,
like,
an enjoyment level.
Totally. And there are certain things that I love. There's certain things that I really hate. It's very polarizing for me. Yeah. There's more things that I love. And just the fact that, like, I've always taken the approach where it's like, love it or hate it, you gotta respect that. He went in there and I think people still to this day don't get this, but if you ever listen to Rob Zombie speak, like listen to the Joe Rogan episode with Rob Zombie on it and listen to this guy get into any aspect of his life, movies in particular, he doesn't give a fuck. Like, he's got so much shit to deal with that in terms of, like, his originality and his script writing and all of that kind of stuff, like, he just goes balls to the wall with it, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't give a fuck. And
you gotta appreciate him for what he is.
You have to.
Yeah, especially,
you know,
the aspect where he didn't even want to do this sequel at
Right.
And then he was going to do a third, but then it got dropped.
Yeah, yeah. I actually talk about that in my next episode of Cinema Attack, where I have a strong feeling that the movie Trick that Patrick Lussier made was because he was supposed to do Halloween 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the Trick script was originally his going to be Halloween 3, which, but he had to change a lot of it to be its own thing, which,
yeah,
that why that movie is very muddled, in my opinion, in some aspects.
It had good ideas, but poor execution.
Yeah. Plus, they had to change a lot of it, too, because it was originally, like I said, Halloween 3, they had to change, make a whole first act of that movie where you're introducing this trick character, you know, so.
Right.
And wasn't, the Patrick Lucia was Todd Farmer as well, right? Was that that?
Yeah, team? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was supposed to be, like a found footage, first person type thing in the beginning. And here's what I'm getting at with all this talk, though. It's the fact that it went through several iterations, you know. I talked to Marcus Dunstan when he was writing it, and he was, like, giving me all these little Easter egg things, and he was going to throw in a bunch of shit on Halloween 3, you know, like show the factory and all that kind of thing. And there's so much dedication, but you find out that, man, there's a lot of these scripts written, and there's nothing happening with it, you know. There was a good amount of time where we weren't getting Halloween movies,
right,
after Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 premiere. And, you know, you think back to, like, look at the state of the Friday the 13th franchise right now. That's been stagnant for years now. So I am just happy, honestly, that we live in a world where, at this moment, we are actively getting more and more Halloween movies. You know, we got a couple coming our way. I'm just happy. I'm going to see these movies till I die, because they're going to keep making them forever. And I don't care what direction they take. I want to see 50 different fucking versions of Michael Myers. You know, change his name even.
Fucking have Fred Myers. Have him fight Godzilla. Fuck.
Have him fucking fight Derek.
Angel Myers. Right, guys, I don't think anybody can disagree with us there.
Nope.
All right, there. What the hell? What do you have coming up?
What the hell?
For me personally, like I said, Cinema Attack's going to be dropping its Halloween episode probably around before or after this show comes out. I'm not sure when this is actually being released, so it should be out probably Monday from when we're recording this, so check out that. It should be on all the feeds. No More Room in Hell, we actually have probably two episodes coming out in the same week. We have our episode 25, where we're going to be talking about some Tokyo Zombie and Executive Koala.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I could show you a picture of that movie, and you'd be like, what the fuck is that about? You know, and then we also have a special Halloween surprise. I know I told Lacey and Dan off air, but we'll keep it a surprise when it actually drops, yo.
I want it now.
And, most of my other shows are hiatus, and sadly, Celluloid Dissections, it's probably the last time I'll actually say this, has ended, but, you know, we actually are planning a brand new show, which is going to be underway in a few months. We're actually going to be meeting next week to talk about the format of that show. I'm going to do this thing right this time and think of a fun format to do this type of topic. Which,
yeah. Well, and Derek, can I interject? I just want to say this about that subject in particular. You know, a lot of people think negatively when you say you're ending a show, but in your specific thing, like you just said, you're just kind of doing a rebranding, so you're going to package it a little differently and just go about it a different way. But it's not like there was any bad blood or anything, or nothing like happened like that. It's not a negative thing.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you're just getting sick of the format, plus I think this one will be a lot better for us because it's more horror-oriented in that sense. That's all I'll give away of it for now.
Right on.
But it'll be
I could give you a list of podcasts that I started and just have like an episode or two.
Right. Well, I think five now.
They're Here is an official podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, They're Here. We're actually planning our episode 6 soon, so that should be fun.
Yeah. I'm
trying to mention that. Hell yeah.
All right, so for what we got coming up, we're going to be closing out the franchise with the one and only from the podcast Under the Stairs, the myth, the man, the legend himself, Duncan MacLeish. So be on the lookout for that. And
yes.
Again, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Trick or treat, motherfuckers. What the hell?
Get the candy out, yo.